Did you know we're running the Nerd and Tie Expo? That's right, it's a convention with people and everything. It's September 23rd through 25th, 2016 in Eau Claire, Wisconsin at the Plaza Hotel and Suites. And it's going to be pretty great. Right now you can pre-reg for only $30. And just be amazed at how amazing everything amazing can amaze. And stuff.
On this Fortnite edition of Nerd and Tie, we have a new Doctor Who companion. Neil Gaiman is adapting Good Omens for TV. There's going to be a pilot for Krypton on Sci-Fi for some reason. The Inhumans are off Marvel's schedule, and we've got convention news. All that in the mailbag this Fortnite on Nerd and Tie.
Oh,
the food's live.
We are live. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. I like
Hi,
everybody.
It's good. Everybody is generally good, I think. It's a good
Everything
good time.
Is awesome.
Everything is. Anyway, how are you guys doing this Fortnite?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm all right. I suppose we should let Nick introduce us, huh?
It's all good. insisting to be introduced is the indescribable firsters.
I can never think of what to say about myself, honestly. I got nothing.
And I gave your normal name instead of just Professor Fur, which most people know you.
It's okay. His on-screen credit is firsters.
It's true. I'm not even a real professor. I just moonlight.
Have you ever professed anything to anyone ever?
I guess I have.
Well, then you're a professor.
I suppose. Namely, a deep self-hatred. That's... But the fun kind. The fun kind.
My self-loathing is wonderful. But who am I? Oh, you don't know.
Oh, dear. Well... Also insisting to be introduced is the unseeable Trey Dorn. That's right.
He's unseeable. There he went. I don't know.
Yeah, but
he's
back.
You've
seen him. Now you can never not see him.
You lose some weight, Trey? Looking a little lanky there. Your mouth looks a little bizarre.
I like the hat. The hat suits you.
Oh, we're off to a great start this Fortnite.
I want to point out, I'm the one who has, been traveling today and not really here.
I would say, I was going to finally say, I am, of course, fresh off a 50-hour work week, Nick Izumi.
Oh, who needs to be introduced now?
Yeah, right. Oh,
I would
to
apologize to anybody who's tuning into this is their first episode of Nerd and Tie. I swear to God, we're usually more organized than this.
See, what I think
it's because we're doing it Monday.
Yeah,
also,
that's what happened. If we don't do it within that 14-day span, we start to lose some of our power. So we're running very weak right now. And as the show goes on, we're going to get more of that back. But right now,
50-hour work week.
It's been a while since we saw each other. Really?
It has.
Yeah,
it actually has
been for once.
I mean, I saw Nick last week.
And you guys saw me 2 weeks ago when we did a live show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a good live show.
I think it was. No Brand Con was fun this year.
It had its moments.
I really did.
We should start this show, though, and
we need to talk about what's
things.
On the news docket.
Oh, my God.
So the first thing on our discussion list tonight, though, is something to be very excited about. So for the last few seasons of Doctor Who, we've, of course, had Clara Oswald, played by Jenna Louise Coleman, as the companion. Well, her days have, of course, come to an end, and it is time to find out who is the new companion. So who do we have? None other than Pearl Mackey as Bill.
Woo!
Yes, her name is Bill. And the little clip of her and the Doctor being chased by Daleks was very promising. I'll say that much.
it was exciting. It was that kind of old style run as fast as you can from Trouble Doctor Who that we really like. And not only that, but I mean, she seemed energetic and hopeful. Like I like the energy that we got.
Maybe she'll actually have a personality.
It'd be nice. I'm sure we're going to talk about it a little more, but it'd be a nice change of pace from the companions that we've gotten since Donna, which are, there's something magical about them.
I hope she's not a mystery for the Doctor to solve.
Yeah, because Clara eventually climbed out of that, but it did haunt her, like the first chunk of her episodes. And so it was like, eventually she was able to become like a full character. But it took
an actual person.
It took like a doctor switch for that to happen.
And then Amy and Rory existed only because of the Doctor or whatever, however you want to describe that.
I love Rory.
We know you do, Trey.
That's why Legends of Tomorrow is the best.
Because
it's really
just
confusing,
a
though. Because there's a guy named Rory in that show.
I know.
And every time they talk about him, I'm like, oh, they're not talking to Arthur Darvill. As for Pearl Mackey, I mean, obviously we haven't gotten a full episode with her, so it's too early to say. But it's nice.
She hasn't done a lot, so it's not like we've got a lot of stuff to go watch. And
but that's okay, because here's the thing. Right. I don't know if she's been on screen as much, but in terms of London, she has been she was one of the leads in the Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, I believe is the name of the show, in one of London's most prominent theaters. So she's got some acting chops. Like, we're going to be able to see. And I think that to really be a good screen actor, you need to have that background on stage. And she has been doing theater in London for years. So it'll be really cool to see, like, if this is her, I can't remember if this is her first screen appearance or not, but
one or two minor roles before this, but this is her first big notable. And I from an acting theory point of view, I'm going to maybe disagree with you on the theater and screen being necessarily the same skills. Because there is a difference between theater acting.
Oh yeah, there's
and
definitely
stage
there's
acting.
Definitely
like
acting,
watch the first Star Trek pilot, and you can tell that Leonard Nimoy is a stage actor, not a screen actor.
But that's not the point. That's not the point. It's just that we have to trust her acting chops from things other than what we can experience ourselves, and I'm okay with that. I'm just saying it's like I'm optimistic, but I don't have an opinion yet, really.
For me, it's more that, for better or for worse, during Stephen Moffat's run as the showrunner, I feel like companions have kind of been, by my standards, this is strictly by my standards, kind of overstaying their welcome. I don't really like when companions stick around for a super long time unless their name is Jamie McCrigan.
Okay,
so,
I was gonna say there's an exception to that. Sarah Jane.
But keep in mind, like, I guess in my mind, she's just kind of always in and out. And I know part of that is that I didn't watch her stuff in order, where she stuck around with two doctors for a very long time. But also, she didn't wear on.
And what about Romana?
That's a bit different, though. Two different actresses.
Two different actresses. Like, Romana has that out, that it's two different actresses, so no one's grinding on my gears as much. And I like Elizabeth Sladen, so she doesn't grind on my gears. The Pons super overstayed their welcome for me.
Yeah,
Pons
should have probably been gone after two series.
I think the problem with Pons has more to do with the writing than with the fact that they were there that long. I think it has more to do with Stephen Moffat's inability to really develop the characters further. I don't think Rory ever overstayed his welcome with me. I think that Amy wasn't enough of a character. I think Karen Gillan's
a fine actress.
She's not the problem. She was never the problem with that. It's just that they never gave her enough to work with.
That's all on Moffat.
That's all on Moffat.
You're supposed to like her But the only reason Moffat ever gave you to like her is the Doctor likes her. You don't really get anything else to go on.
Or that Rory likes her. Like, why is she lovable? Because Rory's in love with her, not because we see any qualities that we understand why. Like, it's even the Rory Amy relationship didn't always seem to make sense, because in many ways he had all this loyalty for her, but she didn't. In some ways have that for him, at least in some
in
of the
several
episodes.
Ways I mean
in, yeah so,
in a lot of ways
yeah so it's he was like that's why I, whatever I defend the Ponds, I don't defend the Ponds, I defend Rory.
I
it's
there are
and,
older episodes of the show that might disagree with that statement.
Well, okay, so I like Amy Pond to a degree, but I can, in retrospect, see why that you have an issue with her. It's just that I do think that the failings are on the writing. I don't dislike it as, you know what it is? What usually happens is that you say that you dislike an episode that I actually kind of like. It's not that I can't see the problems with it. It's just that I still overall like the Wedding of River Song's the big example, because I know you hate that episode. I like that episode. But
which you are you talking to? Because
well, specifically, I'm talking to you, Nick. But I understand First Opinion also. I just don't.
I've never gone into an episode of Doctor Who going, oh, let's get this over with.
That episode is a trash fire. I'm sorry, it is a trash fire.
See, I still like it. I understand that there are problems with it. And that doesn't mean, but what happens is that I find myself unable to follow through on any criticisms of it, because I'm too busy disagreeing with you with the end opinion. That doesn't mean I don't recognize the issues. And we all hate The Angels Take Manhattan.
That episode isn't even a big trash fire. That is a chip.
We all froze there for a second, but we're still trucking through.
Oh, we're here. I'm here.
We're all here.
I'm here, guys.
We can hear
you. Yeah, it was so
bad it froze the computers.
I paused mid-screen too, so I would look like I was frozen with the rest of you.
It's too early to judge what Bill is going to be like, but you know, hopefully she'll be fine.
I will say that the closer that Moffat gets to leaving, the better his episodes seem to get.
Yeah. This is true. Series 9 was really solid.
This has all been his plan, to like have us retroactively look back at his run and be like, no, it wasn't that bad. Do you guys remember how great his last season was?
Well, wasn't that Russell T. Davies' strategy?
Yeah.
That, you see, I am so sick of every
here's
time.
Here's Donna, guys.
Every time we have a Doctor Who showrunner who sucks, it's always like, oh, the worst thing to ever happen to the show. And whenever people say that, they're wrong. I don't like a lot of things Stephen Moffat did, but you know what? John Nathan Turner is still worse.
I thought we all
John
just agreed
Nathan
that
Turner
the,
is still worse.
Which what years was he?
The end of Tom Baker through the cancellation. Both cancellations.
Okay, so he is, well, okay, so I like a lot of Fifth Doctor stuff.
Yeah.
I do too. But there's
Colin Baker just got a raw deal.
Oh, poor Colin Baker, but that's not what I was laughing at. I remember Aldrich dying.
You monster.
They killed a 10-year-old on national television. Not really, but like no one expected it. Like everyone like that's what I love. That's actually really great in my mind. They just went and killed the kid.
The Prime Minister banged a pig, and they killed a 10-year-old on Doctor Who. British TV, guys.
Hey-o! But,
isn't that how it always is?
People
though.
Think we're edgy over here.
But I'll say, yeah, it's how can anybody complain about anybody, like, as say any, like, you can complain about, but how can you say it's the worst when there's an entire doctor whose response to his tenure is, at least I was on the inside looking out so I didn't have to see it.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, boy.
We don't even get to see. We don't even get to see Bill for another year.
Right. There's yeah. No, yeah. We don't get to see the like the only Doctor Who we're getting this year is the Christmas special,
which is still dumb. So dumb.
But we'll make it through. And again, I just hope that we finally get a companion that's not magical. I want a not magic mystery companion. I
agreed. Fingers crossed for Bill. Let's hope she's not just a mystery in a box in a I don't care. Oh boy. Hey, speaking of writing and people who are good at it, and rather than people who are bad at it,
and someone who wrote a very good Matt Smith episode of Doctor Who.
So, one of the greatest novels ever written, "Good Omens," by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, has been out for years. People have loved it across the entire world. And for the longest time, people were wondering if it was ever going to be adapted for television. Well, with the unfortunate passing of Terry Pratchett last year in March, Neil Gaiman had said that he would not under any circumstance adopt the novel without Pratchett. And that's kind of how they worked on everything with that. Everything that was involved with Good Omens, they worked on together. Even things as small as like tiny marketing campaigns, they were involved in it together. So last month on April 14th, it was kind of a shock when Neil Gaiman came out and said that he is currently working on adapting Good Omens for television. This was announced after Gaiman received a letter from Pratchett following Pratchett's death that encouraged him to do so.
There's a correction on that. It's been misreported that it was posthumously given to him. The letter was actually asking him to do it specifically occurred prior to Pratchett's death. Pratchett made the request while he was alive, and Gaiman received the request while he was alive. They just didn't announce anything because they waited until Terry Pratchett's public memorial to an project. A lot of newspapers have misreported that it was like this letter that he got after, you know, Pratchett died, but no, he has said
delivered by a mysterious skinny man on a white horse.
He's apparently like at least last I checked over halfway done writing the 6-episode miniseries.
Good.
Which is a lot shorter than what it was, like the original one, which was going to be in 2012 when that was the last attempt to make it. It was going to be a 13-part TV series, but that fizzled out. And then, As of a month ago, we have a Good Omens television series adaptation in the works.
If you're not really jazzed for this, I don't trust you.
Yeah, honestly. I mean this.
Well, I think we still don't know where it's going to land. We just know that he's working on it. So
I think
that's true.
I think what's cool about this is that Terry Pratchett. I mean, this would be the first thing that is done with the Good Omens without Pratchett's help, and this is Pratchett putting his trust in his great friend and saying, "You got this, man. I trust in you."
Good Omens was the first Terry Pratchett book I ever read and the first Neil Gaiman book I ever read.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
It got me into two different writers, and I've read a lot of both of their stuff. But it was that's the book that got me into both of them.
Now, who do we want playing who? Let's throw out some bizarre casting choices right now, everybody.
Martin Freeman as everybody. Martin Freeman as everybody.
Oh gosh, I want
Benedict Cumberbatch as Crawley.
No,
shut up.
He was excellent as the Angel Islington in the Neverwhere audio adaptation.
Yeah, that's fine, but I don't want to see him on screen anymore. I vote
everybody
Hugh Laurie.
Excited for Doctor Strange then.
I want Hugh Laurie as somebody in that, but who? But who?
Boy. You know, actually, my biggest concern in terms of casting is something that we couldn't possibly predict, is getting good child actors to play Adam and the Them, because Child actors 9 times out of 10 are the bane of my existence. So, yeah, I'm not saying I hate them, but I hate them. And really, outside of the Harry Potter movies and shockingly the crappy straight to DVD movie Robot Overlords, I have not seen many child actors who I don't think are positively terrible.
Well, I can think of ones who were good, but they aren't children anymore.
Right.
So they're, you know, like, I can cite like 5 good child actors who are all like in their 20s and 30s now, so it doesn't really matter. To be fair, one of them was still playing child parts well into his 20s. I remember when he was on Doctor Who and then playing that same age in The Maze Runner and then playing younger than that in Game of Thrones. I'll let you piece it together. He played the drums in Love Actually.
Oh,
but was 13.
Yeah, that kid doesn't age. I don't know. I think I'd kind of like to see maybe an unknown, a couple of unknowns really take some of the lead roles.
You know who else would be good as Crowley? Peter Capaldi, and only because he also played the Angel Islington.
Yeah,
in the original Neverwhere
okay with that.
Series.
I own that. Yep.
I'm having a revelation because it's been years since I've seen that, and all I can think of is, oh my god, he did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just rewatched that. I watched that miniseries before I read the book because Vink had it on VHS. And we watched it in Otaku Anonymous in the early 2000s.
Sounds about right. Yeah, I really love that book. It's going to be I honestly think it's going to be a hard one to adapt correctly.
Could we have Daniel Radcliffe dye his hair blonde and play Aziraphale?
I'm sure he would.
I'd be okay with that.
Let's just take the whole Harry Potter cast and just like...
And put him in Good Omens. Let's do it.
Put him in there. Let's see. Come on, Rupert Grint. Get up off the couch. I know you haven't been doing much since then.
He has
an
ice cream truck he drives around in. That's not a joke. He really does.
He does.
Yeah.
Gives away free ice cream.
Yeah. He bought an ice cream truck and gives away free ice cream to kids.
That was my Andy Dwyer moment.
Did we break Nick Azumi with that information? Oh.
I think we might have. He's there. He's zooming in. Oh, God. Too close. Too close.
Anyway.
I don't know.
So that's something that's fun and I think has some potential to look forward to.
Well, it's like I said, I mean, Neil Gaiman, he says he has about half of it written. And he's doing it presumably solo.
It's going to be really awkward if he hopes Pratchett's going to write the other half this time, though.
And well, you never know if he's going to bring in anybody else, but that's not really his style. So we don't really have a release date on it, but the Good Omens TV series, 6-episode series, is happening. It's going to be somewhere at some point.
At the very least, it'll have
fingers
scripts.
Crossed. Yep.
At the very least,
fingers
it'll
crossed.
Have
the project will move forward.
That we'll get
yeah.
to see at some point. You know, because that's a show that I'd really like to see.
Oh wow!
You know
it is, isn't it?
But you know what? Here's the thing: there are many things I don't want to see in this world. And
do tell.
Most of them involve David S. Goyer, particularly in this case. You know, it's all the rage to do prequels, right? You know, Gotham on Fox, and what's the best way to build any sort of prequel but to do one
another terrible prequel?
But to do one for Superman with Krypton.
No.
Why?
Because, you know, if Caprica taught us anything, it's that viewers will totally want to tune in about a civilization doomed to be blown up. That's right. Sci-fi. So the series Krypton has been in development for a couple of years. We actually chose not to report on it because we thought it was such a bad idea a couple of years ago when it first came up. But oddly enough, Krypton, a series which would be set a couple of generations before the big boom on Krypton, has been in development as written by David S. Goyer, You know, that David S. Goyer. And Sci-Fi Channel has now ordered a pilot episode. Because everything is terrible. Because we hadn't
we haven't
been to the DC Carnival of Sadness in a while.
No, we haven't.
I just why is it like okay, so we're getting like the DC TV universe has been so good up to this point.
Except for Gotham.
The CW / CBS DC TV series have been good so far.
I blocked Gotham out because I don't consider Gotham to be anywhere near like that level. Like that's
it's the Berlanti, like the Greg Berlanti stuff has been good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about, I mean, and to be fair, that's like four shows. That's four shows. But
that's a lot of concurrent superhero shows that cross over.
Yeah, it's four shows and a web
also
series.
Four shows, a web series, and tangentially connected to a show that wasn't initially part of their universe, but now is after its cancellation.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I apologize. And technically, Constantine... And I will say that like DC's Vertigo shows are actually pretty good, too. I've enjoyed... I mean, iZombie took... Both iZombie and Lucifer got turned into procedurals, but at least they got turned into entertaining procedurals. iZombie especially. Mm-hmm.
I still haven't watched Lucifer. That looks pretty fun.
It's not as good as iZombie, but it's the lead is funny enough where its biggest problem is that it's a procedural.
Gotcha.
But it's entertaining. But oh my god, like it's I can't understand why Krypton seems like a good idea. Like
that's because it doesn't seem like a good idea. No one cares about Krypton. No one cares about what Krypton was like before it blew up.
Well, the thing is, though, is we spend time with that on Supergirl in flashback form. And, okay, so David S. Goyer is doing it, so one has to presume it's the Man of Steel Krypton, right? But there's no way there's no way that sci-fi can afford the dragons. I mean, Merlin can only afford one dragon.
Well, no, it's the David S. Goyer Krypton if criminals are sent to the Phantom Zone in spaceships that look like big black dildos.
Yeah.
Man of Steel. First 10 minutes of Man of Steel, Zod and all of his followers are shoved into big black dildos and they fly up into space.
First 10 minutes of Man of Steel, Zod's the good guy.
Hey, you could argue that Jor-El is never the good guy in that story.
Not
as bad as Jonathan Kent.
We know the world is going to die, so we know all of these people, no matter what, are living in a doomed world. And, like, look, I know that a lot of people like Caprica. I shouldn't say a lot of people. A lot of the people who watched
Enough
Caprica...
Enough people liked it.
A lot of the people who watched Caprica liked Caprica. The problem is that people didn't want to get invested with it because they knew the end of the story. Like, I could never enjoy Caprica because I knew what was going to happen. It just wasn't an interesting thing for me. But
actually, honestly, that was one of Caprica's weakest points, is that they tried to subvert your expectations and then just ended up doing stupid things to pretend, what a surprise! That wasn't Will Adama at all.
So
I have Caprica issues.
But I know there are people who liked it. At least with Gotham, as much as I hate it, has only been okay with ratings because everybody knows that Gotham still exists in the end, right?
Like the only characters who you could introduce who people to have any connection to would generally not be good people. I mean, like...
Right, but
well,
you know
your
hero,
like,
Jim Gordon, is going to make it. So it's interesting to know what happens to him. Like, how he got the way he was. Like, you know that Jim Gordon's alive in almost... Gordon's alive in almost every version.
Brian Blessed is with us tonight. Ryan Blessed is with us all.
So that's why I'm like, why is Krypton happening? Why?
Like, I'm even trying to think, like, what would you really want to do? It's like, here's the House of El's friend, Lieutenant Zod. He's a scamp. He's gonna be such a great dude. Or, what are we gonna cut to some weird Kryptonian military base where we're building a doomsday weapon? Get it?
Well, I mean, I guess that's my bigger problem with Krypton as a show is it's like even with Caprica, like the reason why Caprica fell, like the reason why the 12 colonies fell is because they got attacked by their own creations. At least with Caprica, there's a story of the creating the thing that kills them. The classical explanation of Krypton blowing up is usually that like they're trying to do some energy experiment on their thing, but it's not really interesting. It's like just building
story. That's why you can tell that story in 5 to 10 minutes at the beginning of an interesting Superman story, because you don't need more than that.
Right. It's like in Battlestar Galactica, it is a sentient thing coming back for them. The planet, I mean, maybe the planet's alive, but that would be the dumbest twist ever since Final Fantasy VII. So.
Nobody wants to see the Titanic being built. They just want to see it sail and sink.
Maybe it'll be like Halt and Catch Fire, except with Brainiac. They're trying to.
Yeah, but Halt and Catch Fire only works because they subvert your expectations. They Halt and Catch Fire works as a show because they try to make you think they're telling a different story for that whole first season, and then you get to the end of the season and you realize, oh, that isn't what was happening this whole time.
I just watched it because of Lee Pace.
Right, but you know, like the whole first season looks like it's paralleling Apple right up until they see Apple's product.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like,
yeah.
Oh no, we've just been making a janky IBM clone.
Yeah, I don't know what you can possibly do with this. Because again, it's like, maybe we can see proto-Doomsday. Maybe we can see Zod when he entered the Kryptonian military. Maybe we can see Brainiac before he was like, yeah, drill, baby, drill. Drill, baby, drill. I'm definitely not trying to make the planet blow up.
Well, and Supergirl's already doing a really good job telling us all about Kryptonian society. Like, and dealing with that, like, there is literally a better show I can go watch that covers that shit to the amount that I'm interested.
Yeah, but this is David S. Goyer. He knows what superheroes are really about.
David Goyer was important 20 years ago and hasn't been ever since.
But gosh darn it if he's not trying. Oh, man.
Actually, that's the problem, is that he is still important. That's what sucks.
So the good news is that this is only getting ordered to pilot. There's no guarantee the show will go beyond.
Might this be one of those shows that gets canned before the pilot even finishes airing? We can only hope.
Well, I mean, it doesn't air.
They kind of did that with the Wonder Woman TV show, where they never even aired the pilot. They were so ashamed of it.
I have too. Oh, my God.
Pants to be darkened. Pants to be darkened.
Oh my god. Bad. I love Adrian Padalecki on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I look forward to Most Wanted.
Straight that.
But I look forward to Most Wanted when that comes on, but my god, that whole thing was painful.
Oh boy. Hey, speaking of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Our next story kind of relates to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because recently on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., no one will stop talking about the Inhumans. Every episode, we got to do more Inhumans, so much so that it's basically the main plot of the show.
Well, it's because they're trying to turn it into Secret Warriors.
I know, and I'm I'm gonna be honest, it's kind of losing me because of that.
Oh, you see, I'm really okay with that. I am like super okay with that.
I like Secret Spy Wars. I liked Hydra versus Shield, and Hydra is impossible to take seriously as a threat at this point. I can't. I really can't. They're a joke. They're more of a joke every week. I'm not talking about Hive Ward, because Hive Ward's a separate dude. Hydra's leadership has been destroyed in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like 3 times now. They can't do anything useful. The last time we saw Hydra in a movie, they were wisecracking about getting their own butts kicked while Iron Man shot at them. Okay, I can't take them seriously.
So to be fair, the reason why they're deconstructing Hydra right now, so they're not a realistic threat in the Captain America movie.
I get that, but it doesn't change the fact that you have to give your bad guy some victories so they don't come off as completely inept dipsticks, which right now they come off as completely inept dipsticks.
Fair. Points to Nick.
Anyway, not what we're talking about.
But it is, well, yeah, it's not really what we're talking about. What we're going to talk about, though, is in Marvel's schedule for their upcoming movies, one of the movies actually was about, hey, the Inhumans. And go figure, the Inhumans movie has been removed completely from Marvel's schedule for the next few years. That's weird.
Huh.
Yeah, so it was there. I remember we talked about it a little bit, but now it's gone.
Well, first thing this means is that now Vin Diesel has to be in another Marvel movie. Because he was going to be in the Inhumans.
Well, okay, so let's talk about why this happened. First off, when Inhumans was originally announced on the schedule, there was no intention of doing a second Ant-Man movie. And there was, what's the other sequel that... No, it's Spider-Man. Spider-Man got added to the schedule, too.
Right.
When they initially announced Inhumans, there was no Spider-Man movie, and there was no Ant-Man sequel. Secondly, the real reason why it got killed off the schedule, most suspect, is because it was going to be released within a week of Indiana Jones 5.
Oh, jeez.
Which is also a Disney property. Disney didn't want to put two blockbusters up next to each other. So it's because no one had been hired to write Inhumans yet, and no one had been hired to direct Inhumans yet, because there was literally nothing settled down for the film yet, they decided to...
Sometimes it's just easier to exit.
Well, yeah. And it doesn't mean there won't be an Inhumans movie. It just means there won't be a Phase 3 Inhumans movie, probably. And that doesn't mean we... Let's be clear about what the Inhumans movie would be. I know that Inhumans as a species have shown up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the Inhumans movie is going to be about a set of characters we have not seen on television, and that's the Inhuman royal family.
The Inhumans that you actually give a crap about.
Right. It's effectively, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been treating... Their Inhumans are like the new humans in the comics. But more importantly, what it is that the Marvel Cinematic Universe can't use mutants. And so... They are using Terra Genesis and Inhumans as a way to introduce random superpowered characters to the system. And it gives the show freedom to just, like, invent a new character for them to use for that monster of the week. Which is important for the show. But I think this is actually...
Yes and no. I mean, there's a lot of Marvel characters... I part of me would rather see some familiar faces than just making up really lame supervillains, which is what they've been doing recently.
Yeah, but I mean, letting them use Inhumans, like they've been able to introduce Yo-Yo, and I mean, obviously, you know, the identity of Daisy Johnson has been, you know, was an ongoing mystery for the first couple of years. So I think it's, and you know, it's, we've gotten some real characters like Lash as well.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to it, I think it might be better for Inhumans if the Inhuman characters were introduced in other properties first. Because the fact is, there's only so many origin movies you can really watch, and maybe if a character like Black Bolt got introduced in, say, a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, you know, it also, frankly, it by not putting the Inhumans first in their own movie, it would give them the royal family the ability to introduce them as more. They're one of the few you can use them as cosmic characters in Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, since 90% of the cosmic properties are over at Fox.
Yeah, we don't have. That just reminds me of the fact that Marvel is running out of they're running out of the good villains fast.
Well, they still haven't, you know, brought back. They introduced the concept that the Mandarin, a real version of the Mandarin exists.
Yeah, and Red Skull clearly got teleported Thor style. That was, I mean, I don't believe for a second Johann Schmidt is dead.
Yeah,
but. At the same time, it's like, you guys are just burning through your good villains, and you're going to have to come up with something new soon, or bring back the oldies.
Yeah, Swarm. But now they're working with Sony, so they have access to all of Spider-Man's rogues gallery.
Oh, thank golly.
But I want a Swarm movie. I want them to have to fight a Nazi made of bees.
Come on, Stiltman! Stiltman!
And then when they run out of good ones from that, they can bring in Carnage.
Oh, why are you hating on Carnage?
Oh,
there's nothing good about Carnage. Carnage is what was called when it's the 90s. We need someone like Venom, but edgy.
It could be the only Spider-Man movie that takes place in an internet article comment section.
Carnage is a lot like Doomsday. He's a character he's a bland, terrible character that could only have come out of the 90s. I would like to see Black Bolt and Medusa and Lockjaw really bad. I
think that Lockjaw would be best introduced in a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Right?
Yes.
It might happen now, too. Now that it's crossed. We don't know what's going to happen in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 yet. They could throw him in there.
That's true.
Even if it was a cameo, I would love it.
We still don't absolutely know who Star-Lord's father is.
This is true.
We know who the actor is.
It could be Dave. What if his father is Dave? Who knows?
What if his father's Lockjaw?
Get them out.
Did I just blow your mind?
No.
Did I just blow your mind?
That was the grossest image I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, I don't ever need that.
He was an angel.
Oh, dear God.
You're fired, Trey.
Oh, dear God.
I won't let you have time to resign our next story.
I'm fired.
So after it was reported that right now Wizard World is not doing so great when it comes to money, losing over $4 million in 2015. CEO John Macaluso has officially tendered his resignation to the Wizard World Board of Directors and is stepping down as their CEO. Mm. Along with his resignation comes the announcement that Wizard World is going to be scaling back their events in 2016 and really not. They've sold off most of their stakes in Con TV. Wizard World is just kind of reeling to recover now at this point.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the new CEO has been named as John Mata, formerly of the CW. He's been with the Wizard World for a little while. I think this is kind of the inevitable thing. Wizard World oversaturated the market, tried to build too many cities. They took over some other comic conventions and have ended up having to cancel a lot of them. It's the entire last year was a massive disaster because they built too many conventions too close to each other and what they learned is that there's only a limit, you know, if you're only going to go to one Wizard World convention, the guy who lived in the next city over was maybe traveling to go to that other con. So it's your turnstile is going to drop altogether if you start too many events.
Especially looking right here in the Midwest where you've got one in Madison and then one in Chicago. I mean, people are going to go to one or the other. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And Wizard World events are expensive.
Yeah.
Like, and it's, yeah, you're...
And over the last year, and especially if you look at their financials, their attendance, even as they were making more and more cons, their attendance per show was dropping. Like, their average, like, while some shows still stayed, you know, some shows grew, overall, on average, the per show attendance was dropping. But it's okay because they put a con on a boat.
They sure did.
What?
Boat con.
Oh, didn't you know?
Why?
Yeah, Wizard World is having a cruise.
No, I've never heard about that.
So there have been Wizard World cruises before. But they're doing a con on a cruise ship. It's going to leave Miami in December. It's a three-day con with a regular dealer room, a regular artist alley. It's just on a boat. But it costs $700 for a ticket. Can you imagine a single artist then buying Wizard World tables are what, usually $300 for an artist? Are you going to pay $1,000 for the ability to be like an artist on the thing? They're not going to make a damn penny. Like, Geek Cruises work because while they have guests and you have speakers, like, it's not a profit engine for some of the people who, like, they are trying to put a convention on a boat. This is how you can tell Nick doesn't read his own website.
I'm on a boat.
I get what Wizard World was trying to do. Like,
crazy
they
month.
Want to try to be basically your Comic-Con, you know, like what they got out in San Diego. But people can't afford to go to events where it costs that much money to not only get in, but if you want to even say hello to a guest, you've got to shell out $100.
Yeah.
Well, no.
People don't
want to
do that.
If you want to get something signed by a guest, you have to shell out $100. Talking to them, that's another $100 right there, man. Don't touch the guest.
And if you have that kind of money, sure. But I mean, I know people that they save up the minute they hear that David Tennant or Matt Smith or whomever is going to one of these events, and that pretty much cuts out their budget.
Norman Reedus on a cruise ship with you, and he can't escape when you try to bite him.
Norman Reedus
will be a guest at the Wizard World Con on a boat. I'm just saying. I'm not saying
excellent
that you should try to corner Norman Reedus while at sea, and but
which is so weird because he's going to be off The Walking Dead really, really soon.
literally. Okay, are you trying?
That's
to...
my guess. That's my guess.
No,
that's...
they're not going to kill Daryl.
That's my guess.
For those of you who haven't watched the season finale of The Walking Dead, they killed a character, but we don't know who. So if you haven't watched it, even the actor playing the dead character doesn't know if they're going to be dead.
It could be anyone. It could be you, viewer at home.
Well, actually, since the death was shot from the first person, it kind of was you if you watched the episode.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, but
that's the only way I could talk about that without spoilers. So, by the way, Fur,
it's been out for a month.
Yeah, but there are people. You do not spoil shows like The Walking Dead because there are people who watch it a year behind on
and
Netflix.
And I didn't even spoil anything.
To be fair, my Facebook feed was filled with people trying to figure out who died, like for like the last month.
Even if you've secluded yourself from the internet, you know that nobody knows who it was. Even though it's totes gonna be Daryl.
Not gonna be Daryl.
So, John Macaluso has resigned as Wizard World CEO. Many reasons for that, including a $4.5 million loss.
Resigned.
Voluntarily
resigned. Right. Resigned.
It was just coincidence that somebody probably handed him this paper and said, hey, you want to fill this out for me real quick? Just sign here for me, John. Thanks, buddy.
You know, it's funny because he actually, like the year before that, saw a massive year of revenue growth and in profits for the company. I think the oversaturation was part of it. But I think it was the Con TV thing where they soaked a lot of money into it and then ended up selling it off, most of it at a loss. It was just a poor calculation. I think that combined with the oversaturation is really what killed him there. But let's speak of, you know, I know Wizard World Chicago is huge, but you know what also is huge? San Diego Comic-Con.
Way more huge. It's the hugest huge.
Yeah.
Ever.
San Diego Comic-Con. And, you know, over the past few years, San Diego Comic-Con has become not obviously not just a comic convention for, you know, a really long time, but also the big media platform that anything really geek-related tends to get debuted at. You know, if there's any, even anything ready, companies love announcing things there. And now last year, Marvel chose not to attend. And it was because really in... They had Ant-Man coming out, and while, you know, Civil War was too far away to really show anything, so they chose to skip the show as a studio.
Right.
This year, though, another big player is going to be missing, and it was someone who was there last year, and that is Fox Studios. Fox Studios has announced that they will be skipping Comic-Con. But unlike Marvel, who skipped it last year because they didn't have anything to really show off, Fox is skipping it for very different reasons. Their official line is that because when they showed like film footage from Deadpool last year, specifically, their Comic-Con exclusive trailer ended up getting leaked to the internet.
Oh, no.
People in the room took shaky cam video of it. Now, that happened to some other properties, like Warner Brothers' Suicide Squad trailer also got leaked that way. Warner Brothers decided to go around and just release that trailer to the general public, and all was fun and dandy. Fox's reaction has been anger, though. You see, they don't like the fact that that footage leaked. They call it an abuse of trust. But I guess, to me, that's confusing, because if anything, you know, it was enthusiasm for the film that helped develop. Like, I wasn't, like...
Yeah.
I'm not a big, like... I was not a huge Deadpool fan. I didn't read a lot of his comics. Like, it's not that I had anything against the character, but because as a person who wasn't, like, a Deadpool reader besides when he showed up in other people's books, you know, it's like, yay, I've got issues of Wolverine that have Deadpool in them. I wasn't excited about the film until I saw the leaked footage from Comic-Con. And then I was on board completely about that movie. And so, I think it's a mistake, because they seem mad that people are excited about their films.
It's dumb. It's really dumb, because this is huge advertising for them.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Not only that, but we live in a world where you're not going to be able to put, you know, hundreds of people in a room, show them a thing, and then say, all right, now don't talk about it. Don't show anybody.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, you can't expect that. That's so dumb to be like, no, like, you're going to get leaks. It doesn't matter what you do. People are going to find a way to try and leak that footage.
There is a competing theory, and that is that it has nothing to do with the leaks, and that it's because the... costs for a company to show things off in Hall H has been steadily rising over the years. And really what Fox is doing is protesting how high a price tag doing their stuff at Comic-Con has. That's the other theory. And I honestly think...
I like that one better.
That's a more realistic explanation.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, then maybe they should... They should say that. Honestly, I mean, not saying it just makes them look kind of douchey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. But that's just speculation.
So
there's
that's
no way that we
statement.
Can be sure about that, you know.
Right. Well,
okay.
I'm
sure that all the other companies are not probably losing any sleep over Fox not being at Comic-Con this year.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone was too worried, but oh well. Oh well.
So if you're going to Comic-Con and you're disappointed that Fox won't be there, tell us, I guess.
Comment. Let us know.
Send us messages. Go to nerdandtight.com and click on the contact form and tell us.
And we'll read them like we're about to do now.
I was about to say, funny you'd mention that, because we do have viewer mail or listener mail. Mailbag.
It's both.
It's mailbag.
It's both.
It's
mailbag.
Both.
Someone get the mailbag out.
All right, I'm reaching into the mail, but let me just reach into my mailbag.
Go first.
Yeah, I'm going to start this out. I'm pulling it out,
and I'm giving him the letter. There you go, Nick. Did you get it? There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I got it right here.
Only
okay.
Nick was on camera, so that effect was really nothing to the people at home, and I'm sorry about that.
I'm just saving myself from the fact that I forgot that Nick was reading the letter first.
All right. Well, we have a couple letters from our listeners, and our first one is from KOR fan. And the subject is the off week. Will the off week ever get a theme song? That is all.
Well, as the host of the off week, or, you know, there we go. Now it's appropriate. As the host of the off week, I can officially say it has a theme song. It just has very confusing lyrics.
Its theme song was in your heart the whole time.
The theme song is the music you hear in the world around you.
No, it's the song that I sing at the beginning of every episode.
Oh. Okay.
Do, 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 do. This is all you get. Do, do, do,
do. This is the off week. It's not pre-recorded. I literally just sing it every episode.
Dear God. That is so very sad.
That's why it changes slightly sometimes.
Oh, thank you, Core fan.
Yes, thank you, Core fan.
Corest of all Core fans.
All right. Now we got another letter. Now I'll reach into the mailbag for me.
Bloop,
there we go. Got it right here. It's this mailbag thing. Yep. And this one comes from Langland. And Langland writes to us with the subject of No Brand Con. And he says, "Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed No Brand Con. I did for the most part, but I felt the con was very lacking this year. I enjoyed the live recording and I hope you guys didn't mind my antics. What I hated was the layout. It was just weird and confusing. I wasn't the only one who thought this, and I actually had to help some people find the vendor room and VGR. The Chula Vista is an okay place, but I guess it seems like it's all about the hotel and the water park, and the conference center is off to the side. It's as if the conference center was designed for something like, say, Big Brand Limited Liability Corp to host a team building seminar in the basement, while Jacob and Jody have their wedding reception on the first floor to celebrate what will be 5 years of marriage before the divorce. And then off to the side, the Northern Baptist Church Youth Group from any small Wisconsin town that's full of inbreds will host a retreat. And then, of course, on the second floor, another company is running safety meetings, perhaps. So, yeah, the Chula Vista has a weird layout. One fun fact, the staff room was in the Sierra Vista room, and I myself lived in a city called Sierra Vista in Arizona. My dad was stationed in Fort Huachuca back in 1993. The name is Spanish for Mountain View. Anyways, to get back on track, No Brand Con next year will be better, and maybe the layout will be less confusing. Anyways, that's all I got. Now to quote my older brother, make love, not war, Langland.
What just happened?
Okay, so we were at the So I do know that the No Brand Con staff is aware of issues with the layout in that building. I talked to them and I proposed a different layout, which Derb got really excited over. I don't know if that means what they're going to do for next year, but I know that they are at least, whether or not they change the layout, they are seriously considering laying out that con a different way next year.
They definitely should, or at least brief people better on where things are, because I literally had staff members, when I asked them where things were, look at me and say, "I don't know," and then walk away. The first time I tried to find the VGR, I was like, "Hey, how do we get to the video game room?" And the staffer kind of looked around and was like, "I don't really know," and then they just kind of walked away.
Signage. A lot more signage.
It's a combination of signage, and actually they're talking about putting some stuff, moving the Ambassador Alley tables to a different spot in the hallway, which will visually pull people down the hallway, leading them to the stairs to go to the lower levels. Like, there's lots of psychological stuff that can be done that will make things feel less disconnected that they're considering. I don't know what they're going to do, you know, but they are aware of the issues
But I definitely don't know what they're going to do because I am not, nor have I ever been, a member of the No Brand Con staff.
I think it's a challenge when you move into a space like that to figure out how to use it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it's they didn't get it right the first time, but you know.
Well, remember Daishokan's first year at the Kalahari, if I had a dollar for every complaint we got about the layout of the Kalahari and where things were, I would have
$5.
A lot of money.
That's a little tough, though, because you guys, Daishokan had 3 weeks to figure that out and brief people on things and whatnot and make signs. I have a little bit more of an issue where if you've got a year, more than a year, you've known this for more than a year, like maybe brief people a little better.
I think there's an issue where the No Brand Con layout looks good on paper because it's not clear how far apart certain things are from each other on the map. And also the Chula Vista didn't give them maps that were to scale with each other. And so when decisions have to be voted, when only some of the staff can actually get on site, and then they have to make decisions based off of maps, like a lot of that stuff, like until you get a whole bunch of people there. And also there are things that appear obvious to one person, which turn out not to be obvious to 10 other people. And when people are using their own judgment for that, I will say it was not a good layout. But I will also say they are aware that it's not a good layout. So I would only get mad at them if they didn't fix it for next year.
Right. I'm with you. I still had a lot of fun, though. So
I love that convention because I named it and you can't prove I didn't. Because no one knows who named it. But yeah, it's a thing, and I had fun.
We were there.
I was glad. Langland, you describe antics, but I don't remember there being antics. I remember you being there, dressed like you were going to murder fur. And
I thought there was a hit squad out for me. I thought that the hit squad against fur thing was continuing when Langland showed up in like a full mobster, like Italian mafia outfit thing, and I'm like, oh, this is where it ends, guys. They finally are getting to me.
Speaking about where it ends, guys, we should move on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Aw, yeah.
Aw, yeah, money. So this is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. What is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, you ask?
Yeah.
The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I read to you a section of a book, and the challenge to you, the listener and viewer, is to guess what book I am reading from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. You get your name listed on the website, and we read your name aloud here. Is that very little? Yes, but it's a free competition, so whatever.
Don't complain.
Yeah, ingrates. Anyways, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamite Zero, Renan and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless Attack with the Random Ramblings Band, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Melisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavzy, and the Minnesota Librarians. I will say that we are continuing to read from a book that I have been reading from for a while. We did get a guess, but it was incorrect. So we will be continuing with this particular tome. And allow me to go find a sentence. Did he see anything? If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com. Click on the contact form and tell us. Or if you have anything else you really want to say to us, go to that form and tell us there anyways, because we want to hear from you, the viewer, the listener, the people at home, the little people full of sand.
What the heck? I don't know what that means.
What?
Okay. Okay, well, this has been a weird episode. It started weird, and we're getting weirder. I think it's time for us to go.
It gets weirder.
I think we should let this insanity stop before it breaks it through to the audience. So, as always, I'm Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Dorn.
I'm Firsters.
And we are Nerd and Tie.
And
thanks for listening.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for listening this fortnight, everybody. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher.
Or the Google Play Store, which we are now listed on.
And the Google Play Store. Yes, all three. Do all three if you really want to do it. Also, make sure you like our Facebook page. Regularly visit the website and support the Nerd and Tie Expo.
And subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Yes. see our beautiful faces.
And remember, deep down in your sart, there's a sart now. You have an organ called a sart. It has now spontaneously appeared in your body. And in it, you feel the need to be true to yourself, true to other people, true to your pants, true to your beliefs, true to your parents' pants and beliefs, or not, unless they decide to agree with you on specific key issues. And remember, democracy was in us all the whole time.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
Dance party.